Welcome to the Digital Agency Pros Podcast with Andrew McBurney, your host of Digital Agency Pros. In this podcast, we sit down and talk to CEOs, founders, and professionals in the marketing world and talk shop all things related to building an agency and marketing. All right, let's get into it.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode, and today we have Gail, who's the founder and chief troublemaker at Atomic with over 20 years in the game. He started Atomic in January of 2020 to do better work, to be a better partner, and to have as much fun as possible. All right, let's get into it. Hey Gail, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you here. So tell us a bit about your experience. How did you get to where you're at today in your agency?
Okay. I don't know if using serial entrepreneur would be the way that I would describe myself. I think I'm someone who's liable to want to fix things, even if they're not broken.
Right.
I'm a bit of a shiny object person. I'm like, ooh. And I don't know if you've seen any of those insurance commercials where like the guy is like trying to give unsolicited help to people or like help the guy back out of the parking space. Unfortunately, that pains me to watch it because I think that's me. Like, I'm like look, people I can help. Let me go do that. So that all that is to say is that I helped a couple of other established agencies build either services or a full digital team within what existed. I love creating things, and after doing it for two people, I was more than ready to do it for myself. That was kind of what I think that was the thing that helped me really realize, like, okay, I can do this. And it took the governor off and allowed me to jump in, you know, full steam. I'm not a procrastinator by nature. I'm usually the opposite. I'm definitely like a ready, fire, aim person. And so I'm surprised it took me so long, but I just think I needed a more of a safety net than, you know, as much of a risk taker as I am than I thought I did. So, you know, at this point I've got three kids, you know, 9, 7, and 5. So when I made the change, like when I decided to do it, it was not just sort of like, you know, I think I'm going to do this tomorrow. Like it took a year of planning to, you know, and to say like, I'm definitely going to do this at this time. And it was, you know, it was certainly nerve wracking. And my timing is epic because I fired myself from my agency job January 1st, 2020. So
yeah, I did a very similar thing where I started up a new business, kind of pivoted from the marketing agency model to a software offer early COVID. So it's a great way to keep things interesting. I can definitely relate there.
Well, now here's the other thing. Like, I mean, I need to find a better analogy for a glasses half full person. One of the things that we say at our agency is optimism is oxygen. Mm-hmm. And I really do like, I mean, I think so many good things came out of COVID. And one of the things, if you are building an agency or you're working in an agency or whatever, is that if you can make it through that, man, you can do just about anything. Like if you came out on the other side a little better than you were before, and a lot of digital agencies did, because direct to consumer turned into this massive thing, you know, overnight. You know, there's no true overnight success. It was happening for years. It just took hold during COVID.
Yeah.
But it definitely, like, if you can get through that, then you're going to be, you know, you're going to be pretty good on the other side if you can make it through a global pandemic.
Yeah, no, definitely. Now, in terms of you, so you said you'd been kind of involved in these other two agencies, and what capacity were you building? Were you helping them form teams? Were you helping them build sales pipeline? Like, is there anything like you're exceptionally good at that, you know, it's like, okay, if I just focus on this thing and kind of put the people around me to do the other things, we're going to win? Or are you more of like, I'll just do everything? Like, what's your approach there?
That's a really good question. So like everybody around our age, I don't know about you know, right now, kids that are getting into, you know, digital marketing, but we had to reverse engineer everything, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was really, you were learning everything on the job. Mm-hmm. And so my path was in, again, really good timing. I quit a job in 2008. Mm-hmm. I was on like the, I was on the agent or the account side. So okay. I was the guy that was like client facing, you know, here's what everybody else behind me is doing. I was the waiter, right? Mm-hmm. Delivering from the kitchen to the table. Mm-hmm. And I saw this, I saw what digital was and I knew where it was going to go. And if, it, and I didn't just want to be on the side of the account. I really wanted to understand it because, mm-hmm. and then the only way to do that was to figure out how to do it. Mm-hmm. So kind of a long version of, you know, I'm trying to keep this succinct, but anyways, I went and worked for a company that did SEO and built websites and started figuring it out. Mm. I went in as a sales capacity and then worked my way through. And then that didn't last too long because it just wasn't a good fit. But soon after that, I found another website company that did not do managed services. So they didn't provide any SEO or paid search or any of those things. Interesting.
Right.
And I went in and I pitched it, you know, and I didn't have a ton of experience doing it. Mm. I had just enough to bullshit my way through the door. Sorry, I'm not allowed to, I guess you could beat me out.
Yeah, no, that's all good, man.
But yeah, I mean, I straight up fake it till you make it. Like I went in there full, like I can make this happen for you. I'm going to build a totally new revenue stream. You've already built hundreds of websites and monetize them, right? Yeah. It was a good pitch. And I wasn't making a lot of money at the time, so I didn't ask for a lot. Mm. So it was almost a win-win for them. So my first piece of it was I go in there and I sell it, produce it, report on it, right? And then once they see that there's a proof of concept and I see that I actually know what I'm doing and I can make something happen, then I pitch for, all right, I need some other people. Mm. Go and help out. And so then I'm building a team. Mm. And so that was the first one. And then the second one, I probably built a team of like four people, right? Three or four people for that agency. And they went on, by the way, to sell out a number of years after I left. And I take full credit for that.
That's awesome.
And then so the second agency was an automotive agency that was all traditional. They were doing a very small amount of digital, and what they were doing, they were outsourcing and doing a poor job of that. And so kind of a similar scenario. This time I got recruited. I didn't go in and like leave one to go to another. But I went in and I built a program around paid and organic, and we weren't doing social at the time yet. And I started and I built, reported on all the campaigns, everything, and then started hiring people. And at the end of 8 years, in and out, like freelancers, contractors, full-time employees, we went from 1 to 45 employees.
Wow.
And really it built an agency within an agency. I mean, had operations and had managers within that and teams that worked under them. And, you know, and we were managing, you know, roughly $20 million a year in total, you know, client spend, paid and services. Mm. So it was a success story. I mean, it worked out. Mm-hmm. And so long way to answer your question is by doing all the stuff, it helped me to learn what I was good at and not good at, right? And it helped me to understand that what I'm really good at is developing strategies and getting people to help me execute on those strategies.
Right.
I'm really more like the driving force behind for this agency for who we're going after, doing all the business development, overarching strategy development, and then working with my COO to help build the teams to execute that and to make sure that we're, you know, getting the right people and the right clients and maintaining the right culture and all those types of things.
Awesome. I love that. That's a really interesting way to get involved, where you were basically deeply ingrained with the growth of two agencies in a very entrepreneurial capacity before you were officially like, okay, I'm going to go start a business. Like, you essentially built two agencies up in many, many regards.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's like, it was a trial by fire thing with a great safety net, right? It was a good way to do it. And it wasn't without pain and mistakes and all those other things. And certainly without the knowledge that I had of those two situations, I wouldn't have been able to be where we are, you know, 18 months in right now.
Awesome. I love that. And then, so today you're 18 months in, what's your team looking like now?
So we are 4 full-time, 2 interns, 4 contractors, part-time, you know, contractors, and then some writers and some designers and some coding, stuff like that.
Right. Awesome. And then are you the sole founder? Do you have a business partner?
So here's one of the things I did that I learned from my previous agency is we were, you know, really big agency. And if you've ever worked in automotive, they have a lot of budget, but they literally play 12 seasons a year. Mm. So whatever you did, you know, last month is history. And now you're at zero again. Oh, and so you're just starting over every single month, and it's a little bit of a slog, and it's hard to like feel like you get any real traction. And it, I mean, it's, you can do great for 2 years, and if you don't do well for 3 months, you're gone.
Right. Like,
it's just the way that it goes. Mm. And that's all across the board in the industry. So anyways, it was a lot of work, and what would happen is that you would get a new client and it'd be like, okay, well, today's the 25th and everything has to be up and running in 5 days.
Right.
It'd be like this big rah-rah, like, yeah, we just got 10 new clients. All right. They all have to be running tomorrow. And all that, everybody was overworked as it was. And it was like, you want these people to be excited. Mm. Yet the only thing they get is a little work.
Yeah.
You know, if they get the possibility of, you know, a bonus at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And so after 6 months, everybody on our team is a partner and has revenue share.
Oh, very interesting.
On a quarterly basis. So based on how we do, people get bonused based on how we grow. Hmm. And we try to make a lot of decisions with everybody involved in sort of what we're going to do. And it's a, you know, a little bit of an oligarchy in that sense. And so... So that, you know, kind of roundabout way to sort of answer that question is we're trying to make sure that everyone is benefiting from how we grow so that we all have a piece of ownership of it.
Interesting. So you've essentially incentivized them to buy in to essentially have that long-term staying power ultimately.
Yeah. I mean, another thing I learned, again, I'm like, and then I learned this one is that I don't think that everybody's going to retire with me, right? I want them to learn and be fulfilled. Like, I want seekers, people who want to learn new things and apply those and be courageous. Like, one of the first things we tell people is like, if you're not breaking things, you're not doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not trying hard enough if you're not making mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So the incentive really is like, we want people who are going to try stuff. And if someone came to me and they're like, hey, I've got this idea, I want to try to build this website, I totally fund it for them.
Mm-hmm.
And if their future lies beyond us, then I'll help them get to that future.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want anybody to feel like they've got to like hide a side gig or something they really want to do. Like, let's figure out how to get you there. Cause then ultimately you're going to be really happy. And that's, fulfillment is an important thing. So yes, there is a piece of partnership that does make them feel like they're working on something that they have ownership over, you know, which is another thing. Like, you got to be proud of your work. If you're just doing it and going through the motions, it's going to show.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it's just a drag on not only them, like emotionally, like everything across the board. It's also a drag on the company. It's a drag on the clients. Like, it's just not a good situation to be in.
Yeah, it really isn't. And it's a little bit trite to be like, people are everything, but they're very important in how you treat them and how you incentivize them and mm-hmm. how they really, or you say like, yeah, we're a family, or do you really treat them like adults and give them, you know, a lot of the same benefits? And that's, we're trying really hard to do that. And we're going to make mistakes along the way. And, you know, there's going to be pieces to it, but you said something about buying in. I don't make them buy in. I give it to them.
What do you mean by that?
Meaning like you earn it. It's not a, like you have to pay cash, you know, like they're not paying for.
Oh, I gotcha. Right. Right. I didn't actually mean in the literal sense. I meant more so like they're buying into the vision. They're really truly behind the company.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we hope they do that by the time they get there and that we're actually like, we said we're going to do, or acting the way that we said that we were going to act.
So, yeah. Right. Yeah. No, that makes total sense the way you described it. Cause they're coming in and they're performing, they're dedicating their time to the company. And then ultimately they're reaching that partner status based on performance, I would imagine. Now, in terms of that, you did mention revenue share. I'd be curious, are you giving equity as well, or is it just the revenue? And are there conditions attached to that? Like if they were to launch that e-commerce store that they've always envisioned, and then they go to that full time, where does that leave you?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. So there are two others that have their own personal equity, right? And then there is a partner's pool, right? Which is not like, so if somebody's there for 6 months, it's not like, okay, you're an equity partner in this. And then they're like, yeah, and I quit. You're right. Like, oh, it's interesting. So it's a partner's pool to where they're getting bonused based on how profitable we were for that particular, you know, time frame, which means that so this is where that kind of helps. Like, let's say someone comes to me and they're like, okay, I want to do this $1,000 a month social, you know, scheduling tool. Like, okay, well, this is how it's going to affect the bottom line, and this is how it's going to affect everybody else. So let's have a conversation, because it's a group thing, and is the juice going to be worth the squeeze in it?
And so in terms of like them bringing on a new piece of software, you mean?
Yeah, like if we're gonna spend money, right? If we're gonna have an expense,
okay,
is that expense gonna help us to generate more revenue, or is it just like making your job easier because you want to kick your feet up or whatever? So it helps us to make smart decisions collectively, and not just have people, you know, say they want to, you know, spend money on something. And the other piece of this, which is interesting, and this goes back to the previous point of like people getting the opportunity to get excited about new business, is that I think this is a mistake a lot of companies make, is that once they get to this model of like, okay, I need, you know, each person needs to work on X number of accounts in order to be fully monetized or amortized, however you want to consider it. But here's the reality. Is that you might be a 10 person account person, and I might be a 7 person account person. And that's where my happiness is. And if you're kick ass at 7, but I want to put you on 10 just because I want to make more money, and you get unhappy and leave, I'm the one that messed up. That's not bad you, that's bad me.
Yeah.
And so it does affect how everyone makes money when you're like, when I can only, you know, put 7 accounts on me, but you get to do 10. So that there's part of the bonus pool that there's some, you know, math in there for folks, but it does make it to where that I don't feel like I need to squeeze more out of you, and you don't feel like you have to do more, and that you can be happy and live in that, you know, that space.
Yeah.
And I will tell you this. That's a belief that I have, that I think you can work that way at scale, you know, with, you know, 3 different, 4 different teams. That hasn't been completely vetted out yet.
Right.
And I don't know if there's going to be like, someone's going to be like, well, dude, I'm, you know, working on 10 and this person's working on 7. And it'd be like, well, you make different kind of money than person on 7 makes. And that's just what it is.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely, it's a tricky situation, but the way you're explaining it makes a ton of sense. And I'd imagine there's a lot of people out there that are listening that are interested in this sort of setup, right? Like, it's tough to go from that, like, it's not that hard to get more business than you can handle as a freelancer. It's tough to build up a team under you to get to the point where you're consistent enough that you know they're going to have food on the table every single month, right? Those are two very, very different animals. And it sounds like you've created this interesting win-win where you're going to have a lot, like everybody who's on the team is going to have a lot of incentive to really make sure you guys win consistently. Like, you're not going to let accounts churn because that's going to hit their paycheck directly. They're not going to drop the ball in sales because that's going to directly impact their paycheck. Now, getting to that point, like, are they making a wage plus the rev share, or is it pure share?
Rev plus, okay. Wage plus the rev share. I don't like the idea of you fearing for your paycheck every month. Mm-hmm. I don't like that idea. I know that, you know, human nature is that the fear of loss is a bigger driver than the opportunity of gain. Mm. But I do like the more consistent bonuses and trying to keep people happy that way. And, you know, we don't, and, you know, quite frankly, we don't pay the highest wages just because we're a startup and we can't.
Yeah.
You know, we do the best we can for the people and kind of go from there. I mean, obviously there's other companies that could come in and, you know, offer a lot more because they're bigger companies and they could do that. Mm. But there's balance to that for sure. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's an experiment to a degree because I haven't been doing it long enough to be like, this works every single time.
right.
I'm like, I'm doing the opposite of what really makes sense, which is I'm working off of exceptions instead of rules. Mm. We put rules and processes everywhere else, but with people, we try to work in this world of more flexibility. And that was something, the plan was to do that even before COVID introduced all this new flex life for people.
Right. I love it, man. It's a really unique model. And to me personally, it makes a lot of sense. Now, in terms of the, like, I did have a peek at your website, but in terms of like the services that you're offering and the level of expertise needed to execute on those, how are you making sure you always have like in-house talent to consistently deliver on those projects?
Well, so I'm the only one that really sells anything. Mm-hmm. So I know what we have and what we're doing and what we're capable of doing. Mm-hmm. And I won't sell anything that we can't do. Mm-hmm. Now, I also did something recently, which has been super helpful in terms of managing client flow, mm-hmm. managing the right clients and moving forward. And it comes from a book you may or may not have read, and I suggest everybody listening reads it, which is Win Without Pitching, I think.
Okay.
It's awesome. All right. Mm-hmm. Now here's the net of it. What we do is that I'd come to you and I'd be like, look, this is who we are. This is the kind of people that we are. This is who we work with. And if you want to work with us, it costs, you know, X, and I'm not going to divulge the numbers. I would if you really want me to, but in order for us to build a strategy for you, essentially pitch your business, you have to pay for that. Mm. We're not giving it away for free.
Okay.
Because we would spend so much time like going through all these things with people and trying to win this business. And they're like, yeah, no, we wasted all this time and energy doing that. And so one thing that does is by making people pay up front, it weeds out the lookers or the folks that are, you know, maybe not interested. So we do that. That's step one. Mm. And it takes about 30 days. And once we deliver that, that's a go, no go. Do you like us? Do we like you? Is this going to be a cool thing? Mm-hmm. And then we run in 6-month engagements from there.
Gotcha.
So 6 months is long enough, but not too long. And then at the end of 6 months, we have a CTJ coming to Jesus.
Right.
Are you cool with it? Are we cool with it? Where do we need to grow? It's your point to be like, okay, well, I spent all this money and nothing happens. And you know, when you go to our website, we're interested in ROI. Mm-hmm. So part of that initial piece is, us understanding, like, how do you make money? How much money do you make every time you sell whatever it is that you sell? And where's your true lifetime value? And how are we able through marketing to help you grow that? Because if what we want to spend and what we want to do isn't going to match up an ROI, then we'd just come to you and be like, hey, we're not right for you, or we don't think this is the right thing to do. You need to go do this instead.
Yeah, definitely.
So in that process, it helps us to get the right people. It helps us to understand, you know, when we build the strategy, that it is something we can deliver on, and not just like salespeople going out and making promises that we can't actually deliver on.
Right. Yeah. No, it's so important. And it's a big problem in the agency world where you'll have somebody non-technical selling marketing services. They don't really understand what they're selling, how to even deliver it. And they're basically just reading off of a list of like, okay, if they say this and say this, if they say this and say this. And then you get these clients who are like, awesome. Like, he knew exactly what he was talking about. And then they get in, the technical guy's like, we can't do that. Like, that's impossible. Like, you're in like, I've seen it happen before where it's like a client will buy like a local SEO package. And it's like, why would you ever, like, you are not, like, you're never going to win with local SEO. Like, you need PPC, you need to go direct to the consumer. They're not even looking for you. Nobody's going to find you this way. Right.
Yeah. You sell sublimated cat socks. Like, what are you doing with local SEO?
Exactly. And when it comes down to just like a pure quota driven salesperson slash account manager, whatever you want to call it, that doesn't really care, bad things can happen to the client. So I love how things seem to go like flow through you at the start of that relationship, where it's like, obviously you have the reputation of your company to look out for, so you're obviously incentivized, but you also just seem like a decent human being who genuinely cares about your clients, right? Which is also a good factor to have in business. And I love how you're putting that forward to make sure you're not getting these people a bad situation. And if they are in one, 6 months and they're out of it, right? Which if they're an established company, isn't that long, right? They're not getting locked into this like 5-year contract, like that's just not good for them, right?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, we do have contracts for people, but at the same time, like, if I'm with somebody and I don't want to be with them, they don't want to be with me. Like, what's the point of dragging it out? Mm-hmm. I just, you know, if it's not working and you cut bait or you try to do something different, I mean, that's not something we've had to come to yet. Mm-hmm. We've certainly, you know, gotten to that 6-month part and just, you know, talked to clients and said, look, I don't know that we can do what you need to have happen. Mm-hmm. We had somebody that was in a business that they really needed. What I told them was like, you need hand-to-hand combat. Like, you need people that are going out and talking to your prospects one-on-one. Mm-hmm. Like, the problem is people aren't looking for what you have. Mm-hmm. And it's an educational play, and you are going to have to invest way more money than you want to. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that either we're not the right partner for you, or digital, you're just not ready for it yet. And, you know, we've had to have those, I call them the coming to Jesus meetings. We've had to have those before, and they are what they are. But that cadence seems to work really well for us. You know, 6 months is enough for digital to show up. Mm-hmm. It's enough to learn about the clients and about their business more, and to really, to make a difference. So, yeah. So that tends to work for us until it doesn't. And then you got to pivot a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And then, so you mentioned that you do the majority of the selling, how are you doing that? Like, are you on LinkedIn prospecting? Like, what are you doing? Is it content marketing?
Not enough. LinkedIn prospecting sucks. Anytime somebody like is like, do you want more leads? I'm like, nope. Our business model is based on, we're going to be really good if we take on, you know, 1 to 3 new clients a month. Mm-hmm. I do not want 10 new clients, which goes back to like, how do you know you can deliver? I'm not going to take it. You know what I mean? And I've done the thing already where I took a project because it was a logo that everybody knew and they had a really big number for me. And I have hated every step of it, and we've lost money, and it sucks. And I just, it's not, you know, you got to find verticals that work well for you and that you work well in, and you have to be cognizant of how, you know, you got to know how busy your team is and what they're capable of doing and have good processes for that. So the selling thing is really just about, I mean, if you do really well for a client, ask them for a referral. Mm-hmm. You know, we try to produce case studies and pass those around. And we, you know, I talk to everyone. I can't help it. Like I said, I'm like the guy, I'm like, I'll just talk.
Right.
So that's part of it. But I don't do a lot of your traditional like email blasts and LinkedIn marketing. And if I find somebody where I think I can really help them, I'll go chase them down personally. Mm. You know, I won't like completely wear you out, but I'll chase you down, talk to you and try to get you a referral and have a conversation. And I don't ever overpromise things that I can't deliver. I don't promise anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I promise you that I'll work, you know, we'll work hard. And there's definitely been people that we weren't able to deliver the things we said that we were, and we're giving away things to do it because I don't want the reputation of being someone who didn't do what they said they were going to do. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I'll ever hire salespeople, to be honest. I'll ever want to manage a team, and my COO will never want to manage a team more than about 15 people. Which means that there's a hard cap on the number of clients that we'll have.
Yeah, no, it's true. And now in terms of the types of clients, because like 15 people, obviously you have a handful of clients in there. Now the types of clients, like, are you working with like info products? Are you working e-com? Are they local clients? Are they like manufacturers? Like, what does that look like?
So right now we've got a lot of different things. And some of that's been like, when you're a new company, you will take projects no matter what.
Right.
Right. You'll be like, I think she winked at me. I'm going to go talk to her.
Yeah.
you will literally take any type of project, but we have found for the team that we have, for the results that we can create, that we do really well in service industries.
Okay.
And that goes from like dentists, which I mean they're providing a professional service, to roofers and HVAC and, you know, things like that. And they're not all like the sexiest things to work on. Some of it can be a little rinse and repeat. So we leave a little bit of space to do projects that we want to do. And sometimes those are projects that we do for free because we really want to help that person, or we want to do something that's interesting. And those are the things that warm your soul up. And I think you got to leave room for those.
Yeah.
And if you read, if you go back and you read the, Win Without Pitching thing, you're going to be like, he's like repeating a lot of the stuff that they said in this book. So you got to find verticals that you really can do well in and try not to differentiate too much. I have a hard time with just being like, we only do roofers all the time. You can build an incredible business off of that. I know that I would get super bored with it, and I don't want to do that. And I don't have to build the biggest agency that ever lived. I need to build the thing that fills me up with as much happiness as possible. That's way more important.
Well, that's a big part of entrepreneurship. Like, you got to find that thing that motivates you to push forward, or else you're just going to stop getting out of bed and you're going to be like, I'm going to go change what I'm doing. Right.
I would. I'd be like, all right, guys, I'm now 25%. You're 75%. Send me my checks every month. I'm going to go build something else.
Yeah.
Like, I know I would do that, and I don't want to do that. Certainly not now, at least. I want to, you know, I want to keep growing it. Anytime you can think of like a service business, those tend to do pretty well. They tend to be good clients. Nothing against lawyers. I've got some really good friends that are lawyers, but people will be like, oh man, they'll spend the money, but they will. They're a handful. They're hard clients to work with. And automotive can be really, really hard clients to work with. They got big budgets. You know what I mean? And those are the things that you see those and you're like, oh, that you can make a lot of money doing that. if that's what you say when you think about prospecting, you're in for some pain.
Mm.
If your first thought is you can make some money there, that's going to sting at some point somewhere, I promise.
Yeah, no, it's true. Like I did when I was running like an agency full time, like my first niche was home inspections, like home inspectors. And it was actually kind of an interesting kind of world to live in, but it was so, so small, right? And they don't have big budgets. They don't actually even need SEO. I made a huge goof off of, I had this like one client who was just dumping money into SEO and AdWords. And it was like one of my biggest clients. It was like this one guy in a truck. And I was like, this guy's crushing it, right? I was like, everybody in that industry, this is like my first year of business. I was like, everybody has to be like exact same, right? And Turns out this guy's like, oh no, like I'm like deeply in the red. And like, he's just like hemorrhaging money because he has this gigantic nest egg and he knows how the industry works. He knows as long as he builds enough relationships and he can just turn it all off. Right. And that's exactly what he did. And so anyways, I went into this thing and it was like, I had to kind of learn all this stuff, but every single day, your day in, day out, that's all you think about. Right. And it's like, you're building content and all this stuff for something that you may or may not care about. And like, at the end of the day, like after that, even I niched into dental, and it wasn't that I was passionate for dental. It was because I knew dentists already had a few dental clients and I knew they paid for SEO and they actually needed it and they loved it and all that stuff. Right. I'm pretty sure they teach them that in school, is like, hey, if you open a practice, go find an SEO guy. Right. Cause they all seem to know how to buy it and what to look for and all that. Right.
Yeah.
But then it's just like, all day, every day, I'm just talking to dentists. I'm just working on SEO for dentists. And so it really is that, and like just a bit, like I was always looking for that way out, right? Because it wasn't necessarily fulfilling for me.
Yeah.
And so I do love that approach. That is something that's really overlooked in agencies in general, because it is typically like, what's the profitable niche? Okay, go after that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think probably about 80% of your business, doesn't everything fall in the 80-20 rule? 80% of your business needs to be a handful of different verticals. I still wouldn't even just pick one, because if your verticals were restaurants in 2019 and you were killing it, guess what?
Yeah.
2020 kicked your ass.
Well, I actually experienced a bit of that, because I had a big chunk of dental clinics in whenever the pandemic hit, every single one of them shut down. I also happened to be niching into conversion optimization and funnel optimization and split testing and all this stuff. And none of that's relevant for dentists. It's only relevant for e-com stores. Luckily, a bunch of those people were in industries that blew up. So it was kind of just like part of my portfolio blew up overnight, to the point where it's like they made their annual income in a month, because like direct to consumer just exploded. And then dentists just all were like, we have to cancel. Like we cannot pay the next bill. We have like, we're literally closed right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, and like, you can't plan for every eventuality, right? I mean, it's, but diversify your portfolio.
Definitely. Yeah.
While still keeping your niches.
Definitely. And then in terms of like you maintaining the happiness of your account managers, like I love how you are able to kind of stay at that top level and kind of like play that strategy game, right? Like it sounds like, just talking to you, it sounds like that really truly is your strength. Now, in terms of the individual management of these accounts, because like there's a lot of money in keeping a relationship positive, right? You know that as well as anybody who's ever done marketing services. Are you involved in that, like that monthly reporting, or is that the, like, do you have an account manager inside the company? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. Yes. And sometimes, so it just depends. Like I've kind of float around, like I told you in the beginning, I'm a little bit of a, like I see a shiny object and I'm like walking in that direction. I try to, you know, one of the things we're trying to do a better job of, is personally touching clients, right? I don't have so many clients that it's impossible for me to pick up the phone and go, hey, how's it going? Mm-hmm. Problem is I try to solve problems, right? And so
which I'm sure your team love.
Yeah, they're like, shut up. I'm like, you don't have any problems, are you sure? Because, you know, when it rains, this is going to happen, somebody's going to need to fix that, you know. So I try to let my team run the things, right? It's their, like, that's the relationship there, and I just try not to mess it up,
right?
you know, and I try to give, I want people who want autonomy. I'm not a micromanager. I never will be. I don't want to be. I know that you have to, you know, inspect what you expect to happen. But I try to do that with a light touch, and not come in and try to, you know, mess things up. Seagull management, you fly in, you shit on it and fly out.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there's a balance in all of that and who you talk to and when you talk to them. And there's some people that I'm very involved with and others that I haven't, I probably need to call them after this conversation.
Right.
Because it's so long since I've talked to them. And that's, but I know they're getting taken care of and I look at analytics and, you know, I'm checking on them, but it's, you know, it is time consuming to keep in front of all those things. And, you know, as a business owner, you're juggling all these different pieces. Yeah. One of the things that we're doing, and it's just a matter of growing it, is that we typically, what each strategy entails is a bit of paid, whether it be social or search, a bit of organic social inbound, right, content development, and then a bit of SEO. And so creating teams of three to work with a certain number of clients and have them actually cross train each other in different ways. Like everybody will say that they've got these teams that work together, and that's it happens maybe like 1% of the time where SEO and paid are actually conversing with each other and saying like, hey, here's an opportunity, or hey, here's something that we see we might need to run ads with, or, you know, don't try to optimize for this, optimize for this, because this is where the impressions are coming from. Like, that doesn't happen as often as it should.
I've run into that issue before where it's like the Google Ads people are like, we just don't know why traffic keeps spiking. And it's like, it's because you just 10x'd your Facebook ads budget, but you guys don't talk.
Yeah. And so we want them to kind of own those relationships and make sure that they're talking. And some of it's got to be forced and, you know, and that's something that we're working through because we've seen that as a challenge in the past.
Right.
And part of that's the culture of the agency of like, go, 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 more, 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 more. If you're that way, if that's the agency you want to build, then just go build an SEO team over here that's totally insulated from the paid team that's over here, from the social team that's over there, and then try to make your products as watered down as possible so that they do just enough to not get you fired. And then just go sell as much as you can. Like that's the agency you want to build, have at it. But but trying to get people to talk and spend time, you just can't build a gigantic agency unless you're charging so much. And that's another thing. Like, we're working with local businesses like you were. I mean, these people have families and kids and employees. And, you know, if you go in there and you're like, yeah, it's going to cost you 20 grand a month. Like, what?
Yeah, that is a big one. And I think the like figuring out, and you already mentioned this, where it's like you charge for, like, you basically charge for the proposal, essentially, I think is what you described. And
it's a turnkey. I'm sorry, I stepped on you, but it's a strategy. Like, it's like, hey, this is all the research and this is what you should be doing. And here's the creative and here's the messaging and here's what you need to spend. Like, you could go give it to someone. It's yours. You own it.
Gotcha. So right.
It's more than a proposal, because I don't want somebody to be like, yeah, I did a 2-page proposal and charge somebody $1,500 for it. Like, that's not going to be good. Like, what we're turning over to you took us, you know, 30 days to put together. It wasn't something I just pulled out of a trash can. I'm like, yeah, here, dust this off. Check that out.
Yeah. A quick PDF export.
Yeah.
I gotcha. That's actually more crystal clear now. Thank you for that. And like, I did a similar thing. I called it a tripwire. Like, that's whoever taught me that, that's what they called it. And basically it's like you sell something before you ever take them on for any major services. Right. And it's just immediately, it's like, okay, if you're not willing to spend $200 on this thing, that's absolutely going to help you get closer to your goals, you're obviously not serious. Right. And right. The cool thing there was that, just like you explained, it gives this opportunity. Like for us, it was this, we had this process where we would follow a 30-day follow-up sequence. As the product's getting delivered, we would touch base. And after it was delivered, we would let them know, it's like, hey, I'm going to touch base with you next week on Wednesday. And like, and it's just so and so and so on, to the point where it's like, more often than not, by the time you get to that 30-day mark, the rapport, the trust, everything, the credibility, everything is just so dialed in. They're like, if they have the budget, and you pretty much know by that point, they're going to buy more from you, right? And the other part of that is who to sell to, right? Because in my experience, I don't know if it's the same for you, but the lower the budget, the more time that gets consumed typically. And it's like the one practice, dental practice is like emailing on a weekly basis because it is such a big investment for them, right? And they're nervous, and they should be, right? They're focusing on building their business and they're doing awesome things. But then it's like you have the guy who has like five practices. He's too busy to stay on your case. And so like I definitely found that. So like, are you finding that too? Like, are you working with mostly like single location service businesses? Are they multi-location? What does that look like? Oh, I think we cut off there. One second. I think it's coming back. There we go. Cool. Here, let's turn off the video.
Okay. I'll do the same thing.
That might help a little bit.
Your question was like size wise. You're absolutely right. Like, you want to find people who are really, they're just like, I'm concentrating on growing my business. And, you know, you need to make sure that your clients are comfortable, that you're doing the things to help them grow, and that you're helping them to watch the right metrics. Part of the, you know, your question was size. And I'd say that most of ours are small, right? Like one location, maybe two. But what the important thing is I think that you're training your clients to look at the right data, and not just like, I feel like we're slow. You'll hear that a lot. I feel like we're really slow. I don't know if this is working. And you're like, okay. So any project starts with baselines. Like, what is it that grows your business? And you help them to understand lifetime value, and you help them to understand conversion rate across the funnel, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you get 1,000 visits, you're going to get 100 leads, which is going to turn into 10 consultations, which is going to turn into 5 people that pay you $1,000. So you make, for every 1,000 visits, you make $5,000. Mm-hmm. All right. How much is it going to cost us to get you 1,000 visits and maintain that across the conversion funnel, and then see where the breakpoints are as we start to add more? Because if we can all of a sudden add 10,000 visits, you know, for $1,000, then your ROI is through the roof. But we know that the people you add, that some of that's going to deteriorate. You just got to watch where it deteriorates. The key and the point I'm trying to make here is that if you don't pay attention to those things in the beginning, then you're going to go in and be like, I think this is working, or I hope it is. And your client's not going to know because they're dentists and they're doctors and they're roofers and they're, you know, electricians. And those guys don't know diddly about doing any of this, or else they would do it themselves and not be hiring you.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, no, that's such a great insight. I love that. Awesome, man. Well, I'm just watching the time. I don't want to keep you over because I know you're, you're not busy, but you're like out with your family and get back to join that, right? And so if people want to find you online, is theatomicagency.com the best spot to go?
Yeah. I mean, listen, there's not a lot of Gail Rogers out there. There's actually this, especially not guys. There's one who's a professor in Pennsylvania. And he and I emailed recently because I'm like, if I find another guy named Gail, like I reach out to him. I'm like, dude, you and me. So anyways, yeah, I mean, like, you can find me there. You can find me on LinkedIn, or, you know, we're on Instagram and all that other funny stuff. But LinkedIn or you know, me personally, LinkedIn and the website are probably the two easiest ways.
Okay. Awesome. Well, we'll drop those links in the show notes below. If anybody wants to reach out, they'll know how to get to you. And before we wrap up, I got 3 quick fire questions. And if any of them don't apply, you can just say pass. Okay.
Okay.
So first one, what's your favorite business or marketing related book?
I already gave it to you. The most recent one that I've listened to is Win Without Pitching.
Gotcha. Awesome. And are you following or look up to any specific CEOs or entrepreneurs?
Nah, not offhand that I'm following or watching. I watch some of it, but you know, I don't think there's anyone that I try. I one of the biggest things that I tell clients, I know this is quick fire, I don't do anything quick, is be yourself to a fault. Okay. And you'll always end up with the best results if you do that.
Gotcha. I love that. And third question, what's your favorite business podcast if you listen to podcasts?
It's yours, Andrew. It's the only one I listen to.
Not a podcast guy?
I don't, you know what? I really don't. I listen to books. I listen to all my books. Mm. And other than that, you know, some music, but I really don't listen to very many podcasts. So to tell you that one that I really liked, I mean, I've listened to like Entrepreneur on Fire a little bit. Mm. I'm trying to think of who else, who are some of the other ones that I've listened to that I thought were kind of cool. You know, I'm going to go back to the book thing real quick, because there's two other books I want to tell you about. Sure. For all agency people. Mike Michalowicz has a bunch of books. Profit First is a really, really, really good one for anyone that wants to start an agency. Mm-hmm. Read that book. And I think he's got a podcast too. Actually, he does, and it is good. Okay. And then another book, which isn't necessarily a business book, but it'll help you with anything in life, is called Atomic Habits. And it's part of the reason why the agency is called Atomic. Mm. And it's just about the fact that habits in any shape, form, or fashion are small changes, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the part about Atomic. Like, we want to help you make the smallest changes that'll make the biggest impact.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Yeah, don't try to do something overnight. Like, you're not going to just show up to the gym tomorrow and then be in the Mr. Olympia contest. Like, you got to get mm-hmm. your ass out of bed. Like, that's step one. Then yeah. Two is to get your shoes on. So mm-hmm. take it slow, take your time. Don't get disappointed. Don't get discouraged. Mm-hmm. Start small.
Awesome, Gail. Well, thanks so much for sharing that. And it's been a pleasure having you on.
Awesome. Thank you, Andrew.